listening to the Cricket Podcast.
I think it was a disgraceful performance, and I think it should never be permitted to happen again.
That is very good.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Cricket Podcast, where this week we will be taking a look back at the Test series that just was between India and England. England of course ended up on the end of a 3-1 battering, but there was a little bit more to it. There's a few stories and we'll be getting to the bottom of all of those. Then in part two of the show we'll be looking forward to the 5-match T20 series between the two same teams. I'm Jack Hope, and as usual, I'm joined by Ross Legg. How are you doing, Ross, in your DC United shirt?
Yeah, marvellous, thank you. I'm ready to go. If there was football to happen or cricket to happen right now, I'm dressed and ready.
And Max Roy Brown, how are you doing, Max Roy Brown?
Yeah, very good. Glad we've got the thumpings out of the way, and now we can look forward to some brighter pastures.
Yeah, thanks for the happy birthday wishes, boys, by the way.
Is it your birthday? Oh, right, happy now. Birthday. Happy birthday.
Why are you podcasting on your birthday?
Well, there's nothing else to do, is there?
That's love for your listeners. That's what it is. That is beautiful to see.
Happy birthday, Jack.
Cheers. Lads, you know, to kick off the show with our traditional first question of the week, I've taken a little bit of inspiration from the actual news. Now, going into this India v England series, we thought that was big. But tonight, on Channel 3 in the UK, something properly big is going to go down. I'm, of course, referring to Oprah Winfrey's interview of Harry and Meghan. So with that in mind, and with a cricket twist, Ross, in a test series between Team Harry and Meghan and Team Queen, who do you think would win?
Well, one, I'm not a massive fan of the Royals, so this question to me is a bit of a suck. I don't know why I'm asking it. And I can't imagine how many people listening to us actually like the Royals either. But I reckon Team Queen is going to win. And I think it's because she's shown longevity. She has shown that she can go through a really difficult innings, but she can last a long time. I reckon her nickname would be The Wall. I think she's good in that regard. And I reckon she can weather a storm of hostile bowling. Bowling wise, I also think her team would be full of those old bloke Sunday league grenades that you get. So literally they come up and delivering them on the spot all the time. A young Harry and Meghan Markle
team. Have they got a batting lineup full of Ross Legs?
Yeah, oh, they're getting out every single time to that kind of stuff. They're definitely going to ravage the keen younger team, I think.
That's a good answer, Ross. I like that. I do think, Prince Charles probably can bowl something approaching an off break, which I imagine would worry someone like Meghan Markle with her, I assume, primarily baseball style approach to the sport of cricket. Max, same question to you. Are you Team Queen or Team Harry and Meghan?
I also believe Team Queen would win this particular matchup, but for slightly different reasons. So Team Queen is basically, you know, they have the power. They've been the institution for the last 50 years. They're, you know, I think they're like the core members of the ICC. You know, they hold all the cards. And Harry and Meghan, they're like the new guys on the block. You know, they're new to the game. Basically, it's like India playing away, Ireland playing away in India, on really heavily turning pitches, and it would just be an absolute mauling.
That's it's interesting that you managed to bring Ireland into a question about the Queen, but we'll let that slide through to the keeper. I have gone. It's the hat trick of Team Queen.
It's really. Yeah. I thought you were being for the progressive cricket fan there of going like no new format, change the location.
Well, maybe in a new format, I can see Team Harry and Meghan doing something. But in a test match, no. From a fundamental starting point here, you've got the issue of player numbers. So Team Queen has got like a whole household staff to draw up on. She's definitely going to be able to field 11. Team Harry and Meghan, that's only two people, which is a problem. I also think the Queen, is a bit of a street fighter. I think the Queen would be also, she'd be happy to get one of her lackeys to like file one side of the ball. or
take the kind of Commonwealth approach of the Australians and kind of go, do you know what? That was a tactic born of British ingenuity.
Yeah. And the final point, of course, is that the press are all on the Queen's side, which means Team Harry and Meghan are just going to get... I mean, like, the British press, when it comes to sport, and we might talk about it with reference to the actual England side here, they're not necessarily the kindest people. You add Harry and Meghan into that mix, and there's going to be some serious vitriol, and I don't think anyone would be really up to it.
There we go.
Hat trick for Team Queen. Ross, any messages for the listeners?
If you're still listening, you should like and subscribe on our YouTube channel and follow us at The Cricket Pod on Instagram and Twitter and any podcast platform that you are listening to us on.
That's a good message. Let's take a quick break and then we will come back with a recap of the Test Series.
I can't wait to get you to the Gabba, Ash. Tell you what. I can't wait to get you to the Gabba, Ash. Tell you what.
It's four. It's down the ground. It'll be at least one. Saini has got an injury with the groin. It goes as far as the fence. India, incredible. Rishabh Pant is the star. India win the test.
Yeah, so the Test Series then. It started with one of the all-time highs, or one of the recent highs for English cricket, with that victory in Chennai. And then it ended with 74 consecutive partnerships of 50 or fewer. In fact, no, fewer than 50. It would be a pretty short and pretty steep roller coaster, wouldn't it?
Is it Nemesis, the one at Alton Towers, where you just go up to the top and then just drop vertically?
I know exactly the one you mean. I don't think it's that, but it's. I think there's a Superman one like that in America. We all know what we've got in mind here. Like England, I think they'll probably be a bit disappointed to have sunk the way they did. India will no doubt be thrilled that they took that series 3-1 and really fought back in the final three tests. Ross, what did we learn from this series?
So I think there's a lot of negativity around the tour. And I think if you look back, and before we were predicting there was going to be like a 4-0 whitewash, England were going to be kind of battered every single game. Do you think that possibly England actually overachieved in this Test Series?
So I thought about this, and I looked at this question from the point of view of who will be happier. And I think England, as you say, Ross, had they been offered 3-1 prior to the series, they might actually have taken that, considering particularly like India's dominance at home. And I think on the flip side, I think Virat Kohli would have been upset to hear that his team were about to lose a test. The thing is, though, that the conclusion of the series with the absolute hammering that England took in the final three matches, I'm not so sure now whether England will think that they have overachieved. And on the flip side again, I think at this point Virat Kohli is probably pretty happy with how his side played in the final three matches of the series. So, whilst I do think that England winning a test in India is a great achievement, the fact that they got beaten so horrifically in the next three matches basically takes away anything positive that you could have moved forward with from that win in Chennai.
Yeah, I think when England fans are celebrating, ironically, that we've gone past 200 runs, it's kind of a bit of a show on that one. Max, I'll come to you first with a proper question. So the winter tours have seen England's leadership both admired for some of the rotation policy and valuing mental health of their players, etc., and chastised by the very same people who were saying this is good for cricket. Strategically, what do you think England could have done better?
Well, it's firstly, it's amazing, isn't it, how the change, well, results can just change the landscape of what people have to say about the same thing. It's a classic example of rewriting the narrative, but that's what happens in English media. To answer your actual question, I think to be honest, from my point of view, the rotation policy was probably the right thing to do. I think it's the selection where it all went wrong. And we were in this sort of weird cycle where it looked like England were picking the team for the previous test. Or just second guessing themselves, you know, once we got it so horribly wrong in that spinning track at Ahmedabad with the pink ball, they kind of lost the plot, didn't they, and tried to second guess what India were doing. And I think the sensible thing would be to look at who your players are, who you think your best team is, and stick to the basics and go with it. You know, it worked in the first test, it all went wrong in the second test, but then it just the thinking got muddled, and we were guilty of it too. We were saying, oh yeah, just go for it, like, it's your best shot of winning the test. But actually, you know, what we'd seen is two games, one game where England won comfortably and one game where they lost badly. And
we're also 5,000 miles away. Chris Silverwood and Joe Root could literally go out and go, they are actually there. That's probably going to turn that pitch, isn't it?
Yeah, so we fell for the same trick, but I think just a little bit more level-headedness would have gone a long way.
Yeah, I think any PR or communication firms out there have also got a pretty easy pitch to the ECB. Jack, what about you? What do you think on that front?
Right, so my general view on England's leadership and kind of, in a sense, the way England played on this tour is that we're really talking about margins of victory in the final three tests. I think had every single pitch been like the first one in Chennai, i.e. a road for like four days.
Not, it was only not a great pitch in itself.
No, then I think England would have had a chance to maybe draw that series 2-2. And I think it would have been like a straight bat-off. And I think in a straight bat-off, this India side didn't perform the way we sort of thought they would with the bat. On the pitches that we did play on, though, this England team was just not equipped to deal with the ability of Ravichandran Ashwin and the ability of Akshar Patel. And there's not really a way you can strategize your way out of that fundamental skill difference.
Mm-hmm. So I think what England did do well, so we kind of talk about all the time what England do wrong, but actually what they did do well was that I thought they looked like they had a bowling plan. For when they picked the right bowlers, they looked like they were bowling to a plan. And actually, it worked, right? The India top order didn't actually fire compared to Rohit. They clearly had an approach. They just didn't seem to have enough runs to play with to actually make it competitive.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think if you look at who came out of this series with like positive marks from an England perspective, really it's sort of Joe Root and Jack Leach and like Joe Root obviously got his double
century. Jimmy Anderson in there as well.
Oh yeah, I know you probably get Anderson in there as well. But I mean, I don't know if Anderson has come out. I already thought Anderson was good. Did I think that Leach would take 18 wickets across the series at like under 30? If you look at how other bowlers from visiting teams have done in India, no, I didn't think that. Did I think that Root would continue his form with the bat? Yeah, maybe. Did I think he'd be the threat he was with the ball? No, I didn't.
And absolutely, yes.
I think you have to give credit to both of those players there. And I think you're right, Ross. Like England, generally speaking, with the ball in hand, were not too bad. Aside from when they had to bowl at Rohit, and aside from when the wheels really fell off in that last test, and they ran out of bowlers, but the batting, yeah, like this, it's you can't get round the issue that not really any of these players have the game to score with anything like a low level of risk against Ashwin and Akshar.
Mm-hmm. And what I thought as well, when it comes to tactically, they obviously managed the youngsters relatively poorly, I thought, from the England front. We talked about it on the Daily Show with their management of Ollie Pope. Don Best has clearly kind of just hung out to dry. But if you look at most of the England teams, so Sibley, Crawley, Burns, Ollie Stone, like even Jofra Archer to a certain extent, they're all inexperienced test cricketers, and it kind of it showed actually quite a lot throughout the whole series.
Yeah, in a sense though, like you can't wish someone more experienced. that isn't something. So you do have to go through these processes. I think it's a talent issue, like overall though. Dan Weston on our last show sort of talked a little bit about whether England had selected the right players or picking the right team or properly evaluating players in terms of what they can contribute with bat and ball. I think there's something in that. I think there are broader issues in terms of things like the selection of Bairstow. Let's just put a name on it. like what do you think you're going to get out of Johnny Bairstow? From an England perspective, I think that's sort of where things are disappointing. You can't really blame Crawley or Sibley or Pope even for their batting failure in those conditions, because they haven't really ever played there. There's questions around like whether they should have or whether they should have been exposed in the way that they were, and I'm thinking particularly around Pope here coming back from an injury to be put in the team and then not taken out of the team when it looked like he was basically an hors d'oeuvre for
that's a classic England kind of tough love kind of approach.
Yeah. So I think that's where some of the strategic stuff comes in. But I'll go back to the point.
What are the other options though? That's what you have to think about. Like the young players were in a tough position and very inexperienced. But like you said, Johnny Bairstow was perhaps the experienced head that England plumped for to try and answer that question, because he can supposedly play spin.
But he shouldn't have been. Is the point? I think. I mean, like that's why that he shouldn't have been in the team. I think sort of beyond that, it's some of the ways England tried to construct a coherent test team with the players they had available didn't really make sense either. Like playing 8 batters who averaged 10. Playing 4 batters who averaged 10 in that day-night test.
Yeah.
Was that the greatest idea when you know the top 7 isn't like an elite top 7? Would you maybe...
And then winning the toss and then bowling. Like,
well,
what are you thinking about?
There's some things like that. In the final test, again, like, why have you got a specialist batsman batting at 7 and not enough bowling? Like, why have you only got 1 seamer? I think it's questions around that I think would have affected the margin of defeat, but you're not. I don't think you can rotate or strategize or think your way out of the reality that is these batters in these conditions are not good enough against Ashwin and Akshar.
Yeah,
that's completely fair enough. So Max, so the way of solving this falls on your shoulders.
Oh, excellent. how much am I getting paid for this?
So England need to be slightly better with the bat against the spinning ball. Just slightly better.
They do.
Any ideas how England could actually improve?
I've got a couple of ideas. I think one of them we may have discussed very briefly. Oh, excuse me. Sorry, just knocking my microphone all over the place. One we might have discussed briefly in a previous show, which was around the sort of A team setup and getting sort of some more tours in the subcontinent for players who, you know, that in the England Lions team that we think might be the future of English cricket, and actually exposing them to those conditions, and you know, not maybe don't even have home tours. What's the point in having a home tour against those teams, just concentrating on getting whatever you can out of games in India and in Australia and perhaps the West Indies as well, if they return to the force of Test cricket that they once were. And the other thing was, it's just sort of a side note of something a video I saw from, I think it was from a few years ago, where Australia had put in some synthetic pitch at their National Training Academy, which was intended to mimic spinning pitches in the subcontinent. And they had a little like chat with Nathan Lyon, and he was talking about how it sort of was kind of like a third, fourth day pitch in India, and getting people practicing on that. Because obviously when you're in the nets at home, it's... it's not really going to be representative of most forms of cricket you're going to play. So that's the kind of perhaps innovation that we should be looking to, which might give people a bit more experience. Obviously, you can't recreate playing on those pitches against Ashwin, just by building a fake pitch in somewhere fancy. But you know, it's a step, and it's the kind of thing that might give people a little bit more experience, because you know, we saw people, Jack Leach bowled well on those Indian pitches, and we've, you know, had pretty good spinners in the past, so there's nothing to say that it wouldn't be a good sort of grounding for people in the absence of getting them on a Lions tour.
I think if you want to look at the batting side of things, so again, to go back to Dan's point from the last show, probably like pick batters who have like a strong proven track record in the County Championship. Because they're...
Is that against everything, Jack, though? Or is it against specialists? So actually...
But no, so I don't think... So again, I've talked about this before. I think you pick the better cricketer because the better cricketer got good at cricket by adapting two things. And they probably got a thought process or like a rough game plan that means that they are able to improve. And that is something that you have to do when you step up to test level, because it is harder. When you pick someone to play in your test team, what you want is them to have the best possible chance of making that step up and making those improvements. So you want to pick people who have proven themselves at the lower level. And I think Dan made some pretty good points about England maybe not doing that. So look at some other players. I talked to Dan after the show because a couple of people were like, well, who would you specifically talk about? And Dan said, well, basically, England should be pretty much always be picking Wokes, because the top seven is pretty weak, and you having that batting option a little bit lower down the order is really useful. And he also says someone like Sam Northeast consistently produces at the lower level. Why has he not been picked whilst England are effectively taking punts on other players? So you need to do that. I think there are two other things that I'd speculate might be a problem. One is where the modern day English batter comes from. And that, generally speaking, is the private school system in the UK.
I was going to say Whitgift.
Yeah. Well, now that is a system which is able to produce good cricketers, players who are capable of playing first class cricket and have a game that probably looks quite orthodox, and probably will lead to them generating runs in the right conditions. What I sort of wonder, though, is like, what is your exposure? If that's the route you come up in cricket, what is your exposure to any wickets which are not good? Versus somebody who maybe comes up through club cricket in the UK, where you do play on wickets that are not good and you do have to work out how you might score runs in those situations. Because we're talking like the wickets that are produced at some private schools would be test standard, basically. Like, they have full-time groundsmen with, like, I know one of these guys who is a full-time groundsman. They have a weather radar at his school so that they know, like, when the rain
can we get
coming,
a game there?
It's preposterous. And so I do sort of wonder, like, maybe England need to be a little bit more innovative in terms of where the pathways into the professional game or how they are built, so that you get batters with slightly different experiences and you're recruiting from like a wider body of people instead of this very linear, very kind of carbon copy approach to producing batters that we have at the moment. Now, if you look at the bowlers, that is my understanding is that Leach is effectively went to a comprehensive school, and Anderson went to a comprehensive school, and they have slightly unusual ways of going about things from an English perspective, and those I don't know, slightly rarer skills or slightly self-developed skills can be enormously effective in a professional environment where everyone is taught to do it a certain way. That's quite a long-winded approach, and it's probably fairly speculative, to be quite honest. But maybe that's where England need to look if you actually are serious about playing, or if you are serious about competing with India, because you can't recruit from 4% of your population. It's mental. I mean, it really doesn't
make sense.
You can
if your population is over a billion.
Well, no, but in India, that's not, there are players in that India team who come from quite wealthy backgrounds. I think Ashwin would be one. And there are players, and we talked about Mohammad Siraj on our previous show, who don't. In the Australia series, who talked about his background, who don't. Yeah. And that, you know, that is going to have an impact on the kind of cricketers that make it as a professional and the probably the relative talent level of those people. The final thing I'd say is that if England go and play on test pitches like the second and third, like they did for the second and third test, it's really unlikely they will ever win because those conditions were so extreme to an English batter that it's just unrealistic for them to ever have the experience to compete with batters who do have experience on those wickets. Yeah, and also some of the best players in, like, you get what I mean. And some of the best bowlers, yeah. So.
Yeah, because you saw it last time we went and we won there, right? In terms of we had some of the best, we probably had the best England team of all time, kind of with some of the best players of spin in that team, as well as two of England's best ever spin bowlers lined up. If you're coming up against Monty Panesar and Graham Swann in their pump, compared to Leach and Best, no disrespect to Leach and Best, it's a different ball game. So let's talk about India. So they have proved rather handy in their own conditions, with great bowling depth. Considerable bowling depth. But batting wise, their top order didn't fire quite as expected. Besides Rohit Sharma, Max, is that a cause for concern and potentially an area of change ahead of their summer in England?
I think it's. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a concern yet. It's definitely worth keeping an eye on. But what we've seen that there's some of the people in that side who underperformed. I'm thinking Pujara and to a certain extent Kohli, who didn't do that well. We've seen them before do very, very well in England, and which is obviously where they're going next. So I wouldn't be hitting the panic button quite yet about the Indian top order. And I think the English bowling lineup did pretty well. Like you said, they bowled the plans and that helped kind of keep that Indian top order at bay, Rohit Sharma aside. But I don't think it's any time to be like switching things around, moving things around. Obviously, there are questions about Rahane. Some people have suggested that maybe he could drop out because he's not had a brilliant series, but then again, not so long ago, we were talking about how well he did in Australia. So, when you've just won a series 3-1 and you've won it comprehensively, there's no reason to go around making changes like that. And I think, especially bearing in mind the kind of players that are in that Indian top order and the caliber that they have and the experience they have and what we know about them, I would not be concerned about them in their next few games at all. And on top of that, you're brought in people like Washington Sundar, lower in the order, who has turned out, you know, it's the start of his batting career in tests has been phenomenal, really. I mean, obviously he was brought in as an extra bowler, but by all accounts, he looks like he could play as a batsman. So, if anything, you could argue that there are good signs ahead.
Fair enough. Go on, Jack.
Well, I was going to say, I sort of double down on what Max said. I think some of the... So, I don't think India underperformed that seriously with the bat on wicket. Because you were playing... I mean, we played on wickets where one test was over in 2 days. One day, one test was over well within 3 days. One test, I think, just made it into the fourth day. And that tells you that these aren't roads. Like, your runs are going to be pretty hard to earn on pitches that where test matches end that quickly. And so... some of their scores, they're not 500 or something like that. But if you're putting up 250 or even 200, you've actually performed quite well. So they'd like to have.
The weighted average is higher.
The weighted average is higher, exactly.
Well, everyone knows the only people you can possibly blame for Pujara's bad run of form is CSK for picking him up and muddying his brain. What I am going to start to get used to is that Kohli's expressions when he gets out, he's always surprised that you could possibly be out. Kohli, you've been out for so many times in the last 12 months, mate. You're going to have to kind of get used to that, I think. Anyway, the Indian selectors have got themselves quite the selection headache on the bowling front. Max, spin-wise, they've got a choice of Sundar, Axar, Jadeja and Ashwin. Kuldeep Yadav, if they fancy it. Nadim if they fancy a bit of a joke selection. Say in England they decide to pick two because of the batting and how good they are at bowling. Is Jadeja getting back into the side, or has Sundar and Akshar done enough?
For me, Jadeja, I would say, would have to come in just because he's so much more experienced and an all-round quality player. And obviously, bowls left-arm finger spin, and they're playing England. Akshar, I can see Akshar becoming a sort of the kind of bowler who plays for India in India and does really well and doesn't play much overseas, like almost like Chris Wokes from an England point of view is turning into. Because I think, you know, it's just that the speed that he bowls at and the way that, that either the ball gripping and turning or going on is so much, can be so devastating on Indian pitches, whereas bowling like that on an English pitch, you might not get that, raging turning delivery that puts that doubt in the batsman's mind. Mm. So that's, that's where I would stand on Akshar versus Jadeja. I would be going for Jadeja, but Washington Sundar does, I think, throw up a question if you wanted to bolster the batting. I mean, Jadeja's an excellent batsman, but in sort of future tours, he would be worth thinking at. But while Ashwin is still around as the off-spin option, there's no point in picking two off-spinners.
Ashwin will play till like he's 60. He'll torment everyone to him.
I mean,
he's 60.
He certainly could. I've seen no evidence that his particular style of cricket would be hugely hugely hampered by being 60.
Jack, in terms of the pace bowling front, they've got another battery of different selection options. Bumrah, Shami, Ishan, Umesh, Siraj, Natarajan even, Thakur, Saini and Hardik Pandya. I mean, that's a pretty good set of bowlers to have at your disposal. Who do you think is kind of at the top of the queue there, or the front of the queue?
Well, I mean, I think Bumrah is maybe the best fast bowler in the world, so he's number one. And then Ishant Sharma. I don't really see why you'd move away from Ishant Sharma. He didn't bowl an awful lot in this series because... Of the surfaces, yeah. But I think while he is still young enough and still fit enough to play, then obviously those two come next. What I will say is that every time you see Siraj bowl, or every time I see Siraj bowl, I am more impressed.
He looks aces, doesn't he?
In Test cricket. So it's possible that he'll muscle his way in as the kind of second seamer after Bumrah, but maybe not quite there yet. I don't know, if you've not been paying attention, India have got lots of depth. they're pretty good. It seems there's like a whole branch or a whole sector within cricket of people who seem to make a living by pointing out really obvious stuff in kind of a creative way. Akshar Patel's good, or Rohit Sharma's really good in India was the one that I saw this week. And it was like, like we've actually all seen that.
That's a really hot take.
Yeah, I think asking some of these questions, it's another one. It's like you could basically pick any of these guys, and they probably do the job. I mean, we saw that happen in Australia, and then obviously Jadeja hasn't been around for this series, and people maybe thought that would make a difference, but they found someone possibly even more lethal, at least against England. So, I don't know. I think India will be good for a while yet, won't they?
Yeah, I don't think that is going to burn out anytime soon.
Perhaps we'll be sitting here in not too long discussing the BCCI's rotation policy and whether that's acceptable.
I reckon India could probably field two teams that would be in the top five test teams in the world at the moment. They might struggle a little bit on the batting front there. But
it'd be entertaining, though, wouldn't it? Yeah. Imagine some of the people they'd pick out and put in that team. And we'll come on to those in the T20 preview. So we've talked about England. We've talked about India. There is some lessons to be learnt from this test series for the BCCI and the ICC that we should quickly cover. And this will no doubt go down brilliantly in the YouTube comments. But if there has to be neutral umpires, then consistency and transparency of process is required. Is that fair, Max?
Do you mean not neutral umpires? Sorry.
Yes, home exactly umpires. What I mean. Yeah, we're partisan biased umpires. non-neutral umpires, there needs to be consistency and transparency of process. That's fair enough, isn't it?
It's fair enough. I don't think... Perhaps you don't even need to mention the nationality of the umpire in that point. I just think generally it's better to have a very, very clear process of what's supposed to be done, especially when everyone can hear. Like, you know, it's still relatively novel as a thing, you know, DRS and all that. And when you can hear everything the umpire says and you can see for yourself the replay and that it's not being done properly, then it gets like a whole lot worse. It's one thing seeing an umpire give a decision and go, well, that looks like a bit of a dodgy decision, and they show it on the replay and you're like, oh, well, yeah, that was a poor decision. But you know, it's tough. Yeah, you're doing it in real time. It's a tough gig. When you have all the tools in front of you to get it right and you don't get it right, that's where questions come asked. And I won't bring football into it, but because I don't need to, but it's that kind of farce at times. So just in general, make sure everyone who does it is properly trained and knows what they're doing.
And Jack, in terms of using the pink ball, so the day-night test is a good idea. You're trying to get more crowds in, etc. But if you're going to use the pink ball, you should at least use the minimum requirements by the old specifications, shouldn't you, in terms of the pitches that are going to be used,
the grass length.
That depends on whether you're India and you really want to win, because this sort of goes back to the point about England's batters never being able to go to these conditions and winning. In a word, yes, you are exactly what you said is right. There you go. We've been into the pitches on like three or four other episodes.
People love it.
But what is left to say? Like
we've been through it all, haven't we?
I thought so. Just on that though, I thought the pitch for the third test was fantastic. It brought everyone into the game.
The fourth test.
Yeah, it exposed. Yeah. It eventually exposed England's strategic errors and it. Provided a platform for Rishabh Pant and Washington Sundar to take the game away from England at the moment, or when the game was at the most critical moment in the game. It meant that fast bowlers could take wickets. It meant the spinners could take wickets. I thought that was the perfect pitch. I just wish all the matches had been played on it, because the cricket, particularly on day two, was so good in that test. And we just didn't really get that in test two and three. And even test one, it was a bit too... easy to bat in test one, and test two and three it was way too hard to bat.
India were going to win anyway. Anyway, they have secured their place in the World Test Championship final, where they'll be playing at Southampton at the Hampshire Rose Bowl, or whatever the sponsor has taken over the naming rights.
Silly, a GS Bowl.
There we go, Max. Review of the predictions then. Jack, you went with 4-0. Max, I believe you went with 3-1 to India. And I went with 2-1. So my hot streak is over. And Max, you are now the reigning champ of predictions.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm not going to go through who we thought was going to be best wicket taker, because it was obviously all of us said Ashwin. And lo and behold, it was Ashwin.
I think I said Axar as a kind of joke.
Well,
the fact that I was nearly right is a little concerning for England as batsmen.
So let's go to player of the series, because could quite possibly be either of those people. So for me, it just has to be Ashwin. I think I've waxed lyrical about him nearly every single podcast we've done recently, just the mastery of that bloke. And the fact that he then got a century to prove Jack wrong around Holy Shit with the Bat was excellent. Jack, who was your player of the series?
So I think probably Rohit Sharma. So he scored 345 runs across the series. Not quite as many as Joe Root, but he did bat two fewer times. I think in the second test, his 160 basically automatically won the game for India by on day one. In the third test, he scored some key runs. And then in the fourth test, he got 49 off about 150 balls. And basically what he did was tire Anderson and Stokes out, so that they couldn't really bowl anymore. And he created the conditions for Rishabh Pant to come in a little bit later on. So, Look, I mean, Ashwin, what did he take, 30 wickets and scored a century? I think that's the first time anyone's ever done that. Axa, 27 wickets in 3 tests. Yeah, that's pretty good. But in a series where batting was really hard, I'm going to go with a batter who conquered the conditions and say Sharma.
Brilliant. Max?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I was trying to think of someone to say that's not Ashwin, just because I wanted to be a bit different. But now Ross, now Jack's done it, I'm going to say Ashwin. I can't look past the all round performance. Really, he just showed us why he is the master.
He was the official winner as well. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go to a moment of the series, which is a little bit more personal. My moment of the series has to be Pant reverse scooping Jimmy Anderson over the slips. Like, that was just, I'd never seen anything like that before, and just the brazenness of it was incredible. And long live Rishabh Pant, who's definitely cemented his place in that test team for the foreseeable future. Jack?
So I have three. I won't go into them in detail. Root being hit in the nuts by Kohli in the last test was really funny. Anderson's magic over in way back in test one with the big reverse swing in swingers. Great cricket. And Kohli being bold and not walking was peak Kohli, really. So that's what I enjoyed.
Max?
Mine has to go to the newly dubbed Johnny Pairstow for arriving at the crease, being given out first ball, reviewing it successfully to then be out the next ball.
I think that passage of play of England, of Joe Root getting 5 for 8, and England being like, we're right back in this, and then the inevitability of England being 0 for 2 inside the first over of the second innings.
Universes were born in the space of minutes. It was a bizarre, bizarre thing.
Well, I think that just about wraps up the test series. So leave us your favourite moment of the test series in the YouTube comments.
We have one question, like Ross. We have one question in, and I think we can answer this really quickly.
Okay.
So Chirag Chetwani asks, do you think if India wins the Test Series and World Test Championship in England and wins the World Cup in the next World Test Championship, does that put them on par with Australia in the 90s and the West Indies in the 80s? So we talked on the last show and we said Dan Weston said India are a bit like Nadal in that they're the specialists in one area and they're probably the greatest ever there. If they go to England and win, does that make them the greatest ever, Ross?
I'm not sure if it's just winning in England that does it. I think there's almost a sustained period of just demolishing people. I think they're going to have to go through that next phase as well, just to show actually we are the kings of this. And so not just yet, but they've got some great players in that side. So, and they're all relatively young anyway, other than a couple of them. So,
Max, any thoughts?
I would agree with that. I think it's something that has to be done over a slightly longer period, but they appear to currently have the tools, and with some of the people we can see coming through, also the potential tools to be able to rival that.
Great. I think that is time for a break then.
Absolutely.
Hugh Jarden, 6 for 9 at Cockermouth. That's Ben Stokes' old club, isn't it? Six for 9 at Cockermouth.
Welcome back to the Cricket Podcast, where we will be now delving into the upcoming T20 series between India and England. A little reminder for those of you joining us on YouTube to like and subscribe somewhere around where Jack is pointing. And apologies to those listening on the podcast for that meaningless segment.
I think you could do the shipping forecast, Max. That was absolutely brilliant.
Tyne and Dogger. Anyway, to the T20 cricket, the slap and giggle, or whatever some people like to call it. I think this is going to be brilliant, personally. But it's a five game series coming up, starting on the 12th of March. England and India haven't played T20s for a little while. The last game was in July in 2018, and in the last 5 games, India have won 4. So recent form favours them. And on the back of 3 fairly convincing wins, we should say, in the Tests, What do England need to do to turn things around in the T20s, Ross?
So I think first and foremost, the reason that England lost all the Test matches is clear to me. It's because Sam makes things happen. Curran wasn't playing. it's the clear thing. We didn't have anyone to spark anything. So that is the clear bit for me. I think in terms of England's white ball side, it's a completely different mentality. I think a lot of tours before, you'd go to Australia, go to India, you'd get beaten in the Test matches, and then the same players were playing in the ODIs. And so there wasn't ever that break, and it was always the, oh, we've just been absolutely humiliated. The confidence is low, etc. I'm not sure that Owen Morgan's kind of white ball army will actually be allowed, will allow that to happen. And a couple of those players have just come off the back of playing in the BBL, etc., and looking forward to proving themselves in the IPL. So I think it's, I agree with you, Max, it's going to be one hell of a kind of competition.
Jack, do you have anything to add on that point?
No.
well surmised then, Ross. Congratulations. Yeah, no, I think you're right, and it's sort of a good example of how England have changed their white ball strategy over the last few years, and they've certainly looked to try and separate that Red Bull team from the white ball team. So yeah, arguably enough of them will be fresh to the cause, and maybe this is where England's rotation policy does help, in that some of the players will have been coming back from being at home rather than stuck in
even
a hotel
for us,
watching.
Even for us, right? Even for people who cover cricket or like to think they could try at least attempt to cover cricket. We're excited for this. Normally, after a long tour of just T20 cricket or Test matches, we'd just say, "Oh my god, we've got to sit through more of it." This, I could not be more excited.
Yeah, what I will say, kind of generally on the point, is that I think England go into this series as the best white ball team in the world by a distance, and I mean that in terms of the playing personnel they have, but also their strategy. Which are two things we just spent sort of 40 minutes hammering them for in the Red Bull arena.
Different sport, isn't it? Test cricket?
Yeah. Well, so how they... Well, it is, exactly. That is exactly the point. How they turn it around is that they play the next five T20s and then the ODIs after that like they are the best bet white ball team in the world, and they don't worry too much about what India can and can't do. And they just sort of back themselves. And I think if they do that, they'll probably get a positive result.
Yep, that's fair. One thing that is similar between the T20s and the Test is that we are still in India, and we are, for the most part, still at Ahmedabad, and we can probably expect some turn that the English players might not normally face in T20s. Obviously, a number of the England squad play in the IPL, so they will be a bit more attuned to those surroundings than maybe some of the Test players. But do you think the spinning conditions will still pose problems for the England team in the T20 world?
No, not to the same extent. So, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to India on this, to allowing England the opportunity to play five T20s against India in India
in a World Cup.
Yeah, that really is a big favour, and I think when England win the trophy later in the year, we'll look back on this as the start of or as the kind of the refinement of the team that was going to do that. I think the interesting, there'll be two interesting questions here. Like, what is the advantage to India making a bunch of spinning tracks for this series? I mean, it probably does make them more likely to win, but my understanding is that the ICC will oversee the pitch rollout or whatever it is, when it gets to the actual tournament. So even if India can sort of lean on them a little bit, it's unlikely we'll see anything ridiculous come September or October or whenever it is. So there's nothing to really be gained there, other than winning maybe in the short term, and even then maybe not. What I think might actually be interesting is England's spinner situation. So we've talked about this a little bit before, but although it'd be a while ago, England really have kind of like one spinner in Adil Rashid in T20 cricket, and that is not what is conventionally accepted as the best strategy to pursue. Most good T20 teams have a battery of spinners, at least two, sometimes three. So I think what we will learn from this series is whether England need to review that. And I think that's the main thing, if I were an England analyst or the coach, that I'd want to learn from this, is that can we actually win a World Cup in India with just Adil Rashid?
No, I think it's a really good point, Jack. And I think it'd be quite interesting to see how England use these next five fixtures as well on that front. So I think in the build-up to the 50-over World Cup, Owen Morgan didn't really chop and change that much. If you look at kind of the lineups that were in play, here they actually have an opportunity to do that. And I'm not sure they need to give kind of Ben Stokes all five games, Jofra Archer all five games in these conditions. Like, the result of winning this isn't actually that important in the grand scheme of things. It is actually the experience and being able to do so, and the talent should kind of see us through. It is good to see the likes of someone like Danny Briggs involved in that. I mean, he's the leading wicket taker in the T20 Blast, and I think he's one of the reserves in this. Max, in terms of some of the other bits on this tour, do you think that England are going to, in terms of selection, do you think we'll mix it up? Will we see the likes of Liam Livingstone actually get to play a few games? Or
I would like to think so, because I think your point is right about the sort of chopping and changing, because this is the context of this T20 series is that there is a T20 World Cup in India in October this year, and England will be looking to work out how to win that. And obviously playing the hosts in their backyard is probably a pretty good way of trying to work out how to do that. So, like you say, we all know that Jofra Archer is going to be in that team. He dominates in the IPL, and he will be in the team, assuming he doesn't get injured. So that's one thing. And also, India are going to be without Bumrah, so... maybe you don't even need to play Archer to match Jasprit Bumrah. Maybe you want to even things up a bit. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But what the key thing that we need to do is, it's work out how we're going to set that team up. And I am a little disappointed, like you mentioned Danny Briggs, actually, at some of the players that aren't in the full squad and are just on the reserve list.
So I think Danny Briggs is actually on standby, so I think I misspoke on that.
Right, so not even on the reserve list. We've got, I think Matt Parkinson is on the reserve list, but again, he's another man that you think, he's got a really good record in domestic cricket, so why don't we get a chance to see him? And I suppose it's going to be Adil Rashid again playing, and... will Moeen Ali or Liam Livingstone be trusted to back them up? I think England maybe have missed a trick a little bit on the selection of the squad for the T20s, because there are probably a few answers that we might want to find that we're not asking the questions of, if that makes sense. You're right, Ross.
On the other hand, like Morgan likes his guys, and this is a team full of Morgan's guys. They won the Big Boy World Cup. They've been kind of on like an all-conquering tour of the world for about 2 years, this white ball team. So I think from an England point of view, we're sort of scratching around the edges a little bit. I mean, like who is going to open the batting for them? I mean, you've got a decision there between like Bairstow and Roy. Both of them are pretty good, probably. In the end,
yeah. I would caution against opening with Roy in T20s in India, because I assume some opening with spin might happen.
Well, maybe. So maybe you go with Bairstow. I mean, then you've got Milan, who's the best T20 batter in the world according to the ICC. That's not bad. Stokes fits in there somewhere, and he can bowl. That's one of the things you really want from a player in T20 cricket. Someone who can bat in the top six and bowl.
Butler's okay.
But Butler, well, he'll be the other opener, won't he? He is good, yeah. Morgan, also pretty good. Moeen Ali, he was good enough that CSK blew the bank on him. We've seen him play in the IPL and do well. We can go through the whole team, but I don't really think there are actually any substantial weaknesses there, other than maybe the second spinner question. And they might just answer that by playing Moeen Ali for all five games, who does offer... A different point of attack. What I think is interesting, or more interesting, is what India will do. Because if you look at their squad, and really the strategy or the thinking behind how India play T20 cricket, I don't think it's quite modern enough. And I think they get bailed out sometimes by individuals who have like great days out, be that Sharma or sort of recently in Australia, I think Hardik Pandya was smacking the ball all over the place, wasn't he? Or Jasprit Bumrah. They have players who can kind of bail them out, but I don't think they have such a clear vision about how they are going to win T20 matches or 50 over matches even in the way that England does. So England, you know pretty much for sure that every single one of their batters is just going to go ballistic, and that's the game plan. Bowling wise, there are a few pieces that move around, and it's maybe not as clear, and they're maybe not as talented. But the ballistic nature of those batters and the depth of that batting lineup and the self belief means that basically any score is attainable, or any score within reason is attainable. India have players in their team who will play innings that will mean that the team doesn't score as many runs as it could have done had they pursued. Has they pursued the England idea, which is to just go ballistic. And I wonder whether they will learn something off England for a change.
Yeah, they've got the players. We've seen the IPL. We know that there are plenty of Indian players who can absolutely fit that mould of going ballistic. So we should applaud the Indian selectors for bringing Ishan Kishan into the squad this time. They neglected to do so in Australia, which was an error, but this time he's in there. So whether we'll get to see him or not is another question. I would dearly love to see him play because he's absolutely fantastic. And there's also Raul Tuatia, who is still dining out off his barrage of sixes in the IPL from last year. So perhaps signs, also with Pant coming back into form, that that India might be able to break out of that mould that you spoke of, Jack. But I think you're right to say it doesn't seem like a defined strategy that's how they're going to play. It's again just a case of will enough of their players who can do it to paper over the cracks of, say, Kohli or KL Rahul going at one a ball for five overs.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't even know whether someone like Ishan Kishan will definitely be in the team. If Ishan Kishan was English and had the IPL, so say his name's Ian King, had Ian King done what Ishan Kishan had done in the IPL, he would be straight in that England side. Or they'd be giving him. There's no chance he wouldn't have been picked for a series. He'd have at least been in the frame.
Of course, what England would then be doing is going, well, actually, maybe this Ian King could bat number three for England in tests.
Yeah, well, that could happen. That actually could happen. But he'd be in the T20 side, and I don't think that clarity of thought around what is a really good T20 batter exists in the India setup at the moment. And I think you kind of named one of the guys who's sort of maybe holding that development up, and it is Virat Kohli, who doesn't hit enough boundaries. People are going to be cross about this, but we might.
Well, it's
just,
it's factual. Look at his lowest IPL boundary percentage in the IPL last year.
Look at the IPL. That is not how to bat in modern day T20 cricket. And if you pursue that strategy, and you pick lots of other players who also pursue that strategy, what you're doing is capping like what you can actually achieve as a team. Ishan Kishan doesn't think that way.
Yeah, they don't even have the best T20 captain leading the side. No, that's just a fact. Let's just get that out there, isn't it? But Max, so I think I'm very, very excited to see. And on the bowling front, Max, they've also picked, is it Chakravarti in the side? So I think he's a good addition. And I think Chahal was probably going to cause England a couple of problems. I think in terms of the player I'm most excited to see, it has to be Sky. Like, it just has to be him. Him for Mumbai Indians last year was great. Him and Ishan Kishan batting together is a deadly combination. And if you think of just that explosiveness in that lineup, if you had Rohit, Dhawan, Kishan, Sky, Pant, that is an unbelievably explosive top order. Kohli, about six, mate. It's about seven.
we'll see what they do. But I suspect it will be like KL Rahul, Shikhar Dhawan, Kohli. Sharma will obviously be in there. And I don't know whether that is exactly India's best team. They are all really good players. They are all really good players, and that you can't get around that. And clearly, it's in Kohli's locker to score at like 140. But I just don't think that that team play with the reckless abandon that the England team do. Do we want to do? We've got a couple of Twitter questions in. Do we want to do them or the predictions first, Max?
Let's start with the predictions, and then we'll mop up the Twitter questions. But yeah, maybe this series could be India's Brendan McCullum moment, as it was for England. Perhaps Owen Morgan can be the Brendan McCullum that India need to kick things on. So Ross, why don't you start us off then? How do you see this T20 series finishing up?
I reckon it'll be 3-2 to England, and there'll be a super over in there somewhere.
That is exactly what I thought.
Really?
Yeah, 100% nailed on what I thought would happen as well.
Right, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is to a certain extent, and I'm going to say 4-1. Particularly if you take Bumrah out of that team, that's a big downgrade. And the general strategy that India pursue, I already think is wrong. And I think England could score them a little bit. So I look forward to people quoting that back at me in a couple of weeks' time.
That's good enough for Michael Vaughan. It's good enough for Chapo. Right then. So what do we have to answer from Twitter, Jack?
So Anoop asks, will Rahul Tuatia make a debut? I don't know if either of you have got a view on that.
I think he'll play in the last game.
Okay, Ross? Yeah.
I'm going to have to agree with Max on that one. I can't see him getting... I think he's pretty low down on the old pecking order. Yeah, if you look at that.
I don't see him playing, to be honest. And will Jadeja be missed more in the white ball leg than the test matches, Max?
Well, maybe, because Axel Patel did all right, didn't he?
I don't think
you could be missed less in the tests. And that's not to denigrate Jadeja, that's just how it went.
And Gautam asks, this is from an England point of view, or about the England team rather. Ryan Best have ensured rapid starts for England, which has been the bedrock of England's recent white ball success. Do you think the duo can replicate that in Indian conditions? Ross?
I don't think Jason Roy should open for England. I genuinely don't think he's got the pedigree to actually do it. I think when he's in recent form, he hasn't looked that convincing. In my opinion, Bairstow and Butler is our best opening pair, and they can certainly do that.
Yeah, I think that's what I would say. Max?
I think that's who will play as well. I think Roy's had a pretty bad recent run of games, and I think he will probably start as second fiddle to Bairstow.
Cool. Let us know in the comments what your predictions are so that we can laugh at you if you're wrong as well. And otherwise, shall we take a quick break? Welcome back for the segment we know as Cricket News. This is basically where we go through all the stories that we wanted to talk about but didn't want to devote sort of 30 minutes of the show to. So let's start with possibly the biggest, certainly the funniest, definitely the most predictable. The Pakistani Super League has been called off, Ross.
Yeah, it has. It's been seven people have contracted COVID. And unsurprisingly, the competition that was letting thousands of fans in, there was parties in the hotel. You like to think that not following scientific advice has caused a bit of trouble. And unfortunately, what was filling all of our time between the test matches has been cruelly taken away from us.
Yeah, it was disappointing to see.
Disappointing than for David Gower, whose foray back into commentary has been cut cruelly short.
Yeah, we had, I mean, sort of Ross, as you alluded to, we had heard stories of people like going to the bar in the secure bubble, and then there's just a wedding of people not in the bubble, also like in the bar area of the hotel. So you kind of could see it coming. Ross, I am right that it is completely cancelled now, or is there a possible go-no-go point coming up in the next few days?
I think there's a possible no-go, especially like with Pakistani Super League. You never know what's going to happen, which is the best thing about Pakistani cricket. Like, we love it because of the unpredictability of it. We're not being detrimental to Pakistan at all here. It's just one of those things. I think it was great to have cricket back on, especially as how popular it was getting because of lockdown across the world. And it's just absolutely gutting that it's been postponed and, more than likely cancelled.
Yeah. Well, you never know. There's not really much more to say about that. I mean, we finally saw a game where the team batting first won. And that was it. They cancelled the whole tournament.
They were just like, we don't want this to happen.
They obviously knew something must have been up at that point.
In other T20 news, maybe if we were a bit more global, we'd have devoted more of the show to this than we are going to. Pollard, 6 sixes in an over. Max, talk about that.
6 sixes in an over off the bowler who'd just taken a hat-trick. let's just put that context in there. He's joined the prodigious list of two people, is it? Herschel Gibbs and Yuvraj Singh, who've achieved that feat in international cricket. So a fine addition to the list. And you love to see it, don't you? 6 sixes, it's brilliant. But I just love the fact that he'd taken a hat. To go from that to the hat trick to 6 sixes is quite an achievement, and you have to sort of wonder at the end of that game how are you feeling about your individual performance. where do you stand on that,
Ross? How would you feel had you gone hat trick to 6 sixes?
I genuinely would have given the big I am, like that final celebration of taking a hat trick. I would have been Monty Panesaring around Imran Tahir around the stadium, and then to come back from the you're going to be very sheepish, aren't you? You're like very sheepish, and just the nonchalance that Pollard did it with as well. It was like ruthless hitting, and like yes. I've never seen anything quite like it. Really,
I think the West Indies are shaping up quite well for this T20 World Cup. I mean, they might not be. The best team in the tournament. They've gone for an aging Chris Gayle, who doesn't seem to be able to do it at the moment.
He just needs an IPL to that
could work. But they do seem to have some quite exciting players, and they've taken care of Sri Lanka absolutely no problem. Should we move on?
Well, just one thing, Max. You might talk about kind of Chris Gayle there, but if they come up against England, just wheel him out for that. He'll take England apart. That is the classic Chris Gayle move.
The other T20 series happening in the world at the moment is Australia v New Zealand in New Zealand. After being 2-0 down, the Australians managed to bring it back to 2-2. What happened in the decider, Ross?
Martin Guptill decided to be good again. He hit some runs earlier in the series, but at a tiny ground, this time at Wellington, a bit of a larger stadium, and he was well and truly back to being the Martin Guptill we know and love. Finch, back amongst the runs as well. Couple of okay innings, but he was on the chopping block, really. The Australian media was kind of taking the route of the British media and kind of calling for, is the leadership right within Australia, etc. So I think he's just about earned himself a place at leading his country to the World Cup, which is good to see. And also, New Zealand were kind of experimenting as well. Throughout the series, they kind of were bringing in Jimmy Neesham, kind of trying to understand what medium pace bowling are there. They played like three spinners or four spinners in this final game with Mark Chapman, the Hong Kong international, representing them, bowled left arm orthodox. So it's good to see that teams are really trying kind of new things ahead of the World Cup.
Yep.
You know who does need to try some new things ahead of the IPL? Carl Jameson.
RCB.
Was it over 200 runs he conceded in the end? I don't know. It was lots.
genuinely, it was just Matt Wade figured out how to play him. And I don't like Matthew Wade at all. But literally, he would bowl back of a leg and Matthew Wade would just jump up and hit him over the top. It was really quite impressive. Anyway, enough of New Zealand, Australia.
Also in New Zealand then, the England women won 3-0 in the T20 series over their New Zealand-ish counterparts. Max, did you catch any of this? It was on pretty late at night.
No, once again, I was not up in the wee hours watching that. Much like the England India series, I was saving that for when I was normally awake.
Fair enough. That's pretty good for the England team, though. Only losing one game away. New Zealand aren't very good, are they, Ross?
Well, they've I think it's one win in about 17 games, but their one win was pretty emphatic over England. So well done them, and happy International Women's Day for yesterday, I suppose, when this will be released. India versus England has also been announced as a test match between the women's teams. So test match cricket actually forwards, is they don't really get many opportunities to play. So that is a huge thing to be announced.
Yeah, good to see India getting involved as well. I think that's been a while since they've had a fixture. And speaking of fixtures, the IPL fixtures are out. That starts, I think, on the 9th of April, Ross.
It does indeed. And we'll be doing a bit of a preview going through it because they've actually done something a little bit clever with the scheduling. So there's something around teams not playing home games, and they've tried to balance it out in terms of the different things. So if you saw at IPL 20, when was it Sharjah was the tiny ground?
Yeah.
Like some teams got to play more games and they've tried to balance it out with different teams moving around. So,
am I right in saying that there's three legs? So there's like I don't know, is it a South India leg in Chennai, and then another one up in like Mumbai, maybe Pune? I didn't look at it exactly, but it's something like that, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, it is, and I think it proves again that the IPL, when it comes to organising things and kind of actually being, I don't know, just smart in their kind of cricketing decisions in terms of the IPL when the kind of franchise is involved, is on point. So we look forward to some high quality cricket, and all of the naysayers that our listeners may be seeing on Twitter at the moment, IPL is ruining test cricket. Just get on board, mate. The IPL is incredible.
Final thing, and it is the last bit of test cricket of the week. Zimbabwe beat Afghanistan in another 2-day match, actually. That was good. That's the end of this week's episode of the Cricket Podcast. Ross, have we got any more messages for our listeners?
Yep, like and subscribe and leave some comments. Jack will respond, especially if you wish him happy birthday. So happy birthday, Jack. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the Cricket Podcast.
Cool. Max, have you got any messages?
Happy birthday. Is that what you wanted?
No, I just thought you might have had some messages. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back after Friday's fixture in the T20 for a little recap of that, and I'm looking forward to it.